Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hi, this is Linda, and today I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section 1. This is Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. District 2's new councilman, Norman scores lopsided special election win by Stuart Doreen. John Norman will be the next Midland City Council representative for South and East Midland. The owner of an athletic training business dominated a three-person race to win the special election for City Council District 2. Norman claimed 62.3% of the 518 votes, including mail-in ballots, to defeat Adrian Urquidy and Stephen Vallea, who claimed 28.9% and 8.6%, respectively. Norman replaces John B. Love III, who announced his intention to run for U.S. Senate and resigned his seat in September. He has since dropped out of the Senate race. Love endorsed the 40-year-old Norman. During the campaign, Norman talked about bringing economic opportunity zones to the south and east sides. He often stated his belief that these zones will spur development and result in more housing and higher-paying jobs. He said Tuesday night that an early priority will be to put together a District 2 advisory committee, which he said will be made up of two people from each precinct in the district and a police officer. They can have input on the things they feel like we need. I want to be a bridge from the residents to City Hall, Norman said. There are things we need to accomplish not only for District 2, but for the city as a whole. Norman, a former All-State football player at Lee High School and former Texas Tech Red Raider, said there were butterflies on Election Day, but that there was also plenty of family support. He said his mother drove in from Fort Worth and a brother traveled to Midland from Oklahoma. Those butterflies were gone after early voting totals were revealed. Norman claimed 72% of the 286 votes, including mail-in ballots. Norman is the owner of Norman Elite, an athletic training organization that trains children 8 to 18 in a variety of sports, including football, track, basketball, volleyball, and boxing. He will join the Midland City Council with three other new members following the November 5th election. The new members are Mayor Patrick Payton, District 3 Councilman Jack Ladd Jr., and District 4 Councilwoman Lori Blong. Returning members are at-large Councilman Spencer Robnett and Michael Trost, and District 1's Scott Dufford. It means a lot to have so many people in the community trust me to lead them and be a voice for them, Norman said. City leaders call for more resident involvement. Council wants to promote openings on boards and commissions by Stuart Doreen. City leaders want a more transparent process to fill commissions and boards. Members of the Midland City Council on Tuesday opted to hold on to potential nominations for commission and board seats and make another appeal for interested candidates. Those positions include spots on the Parks and Recreation Commission and the Midland Development Corp. Information from the City Secretary's office indicates four of the 16 city boards and commissioners have openings. Some have more than one. Any openings will be considered at the second City Council meeting in February. Interested city residents must apply with the City Secretary's office by February 18th. In the cases of the Parks Commission and MDC, potential candidates were discussed, but city members asked if there was more information on the candidate or if enough work had been done to publicize an opening. This led to a discussion between city leaders. At-large Councilman Michael Trost wanted a vote for an applicant to the MDC and pushed for that vote even when other members wanted the city to attempt to get more applicants. We are not rejecting a candidate offhand, but making sure the public is informed, Mayor Patrick Payton told Trost, to which Trost responded, those who have put in applications should have hearing now. The mayor answered, we will give people a hearing. The decision of the council about that candidate for the MDC will be held another day. MDC officials said after the meeting that they have enough board members for a quorum, so not having a fifth board member will not be a burden. Councilmember Lori Blong, the new representative for District 4, said deferring selections was one way new council members are pumping the brakes on the way things have been done. Both Blong and Payton said during their campaigns that they often heard about the need for better communication between the city and the residents. The selection of commission and board members is an opportunity to make good on that request. We want to make an environment where they're welcome, Blong said, and we invite that. And we've created pathways for them to get involved. That is my goal. I think we need to be careful as we're appointing people for any of the city boards and commissions that we're given ample opportunity for city participation, Blong said. How to get involved. Go to the city's website on the main page under City Leadership. Click on Boards and Commissions for a page with all the board and commissions and related information. Download an application for a city board or commission or a list of vacant positions. Apply online or download an application and take it to the city manager's office. List of vacant positions. Midland Development Corp. Term expires January 14, 2023. Midland Odessa Urban Transit District Board, two vacant positions, one term expires September 30, 2021, and one term expires September 30, 2022. Midland Spaceport Development Corp, two vacant positions, terms expire June 2, 2021. Parks and Recreation Commission, one vacant position, term expires September 30, 2021. City of Midland's Board and Commissions, Airport Planning and Development Board, Animal Services and Advisory Commission, Building Codes Review Committee, Construction Board of Adjustments and Appeals, Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Citizens Development and Hotel Motel Advisory Board, Midland Development Corp., Midland Higher Education Facilities Corp., Midland Housing Authority Commission, Midland Spaceport Development Corp., Midland Odessa Urban Transit District Board, Oil and Gas Advisory Committee, Parks and Recreation Commission, Permian Basin Community Center for Mental Health and Mental Retardation, Personnel Board of Appeals, Planning and Zoning Commission, Zoning Board of Adjustment, Airport Zoning Board of Adjustment. Campaign Finance. Dumeier raises $40,000 in Commissioner Precinct 1 race by Caitlin Randall. Leonard Dumeier has raised more than twice as much in political contributions as incumbent Scott Ramsey in the race for Precinct 1 of Midland County Commissioner's Court. He has also spent half the $40,000 he has raised. Campaign finance reports filed with the Midland County Elections Office this month show Dumeier has raised $40,062 and spent $20,072 from those contributions. One $30,000 contribution accounts for most of what Dumeier has raised. About $6,500 of the funds spent went to his son, Jonathan Dumeier, in salary expenses for serving as his campaign manager. Ramsey has raised $18,150 and spent $9,110 according to his campaign finance report. Below is campaign finance report information for Midland County Commissioner's Court Precinct 1 candidates. Contributions and expenditures of $250 or more are listed. Leonard Dumeier. Total political contributions, $40,062. Total political expenditures, $20,072. Contributions, $30,000 Gary Covington, $1,000 Wayne and Sherry Sagar, $3,000 Jim and Cassie Garrity, $4,550 Dustin Holgan, $437 Tanya Dawson. Expenditures, $750 Midland County Republican Party, $1,625 Jonathan Dumeier, $1,625 Jonathan Dumeier, $1,625 Jonathan Dumeier, $1,625 Jonathan Dumeier, $500 Katie's Barbecue, $1,216 Katie's Barbecue, $400 Midland County Republican Women's, $328 Century Graphics and Sign, $842 Century Graphics and Sign, $252 Century Graphics and Sign, $351 FedEx Office, $384 Moonshadow Mobile, $1,930 Current Media Partners, $2,517 Current Media Partners, $486 Century Graphics and Sign, $1,944 Century Graphics and Sign, $450, Holguin Media. Scott Ramsey, total political contributions, $18,150. Total political expenditures, $9,110. Contributions, $250, E.J. Baldridge. $300, Mary McDaniel Rogers. $500, Tim and Annette Kolb. $250, Kyle and Holly McDonald. $250, Chris and Courtney Renault. $500, Jimmy and Brenda Smith. $500, Brenda Smith. $250, Scott Northern. $250, J.B. Luttrell. $250, Ronnie and Margaret Williams. $500, Mike Harrison. $250, Kim and Richard Hatchett. $250, Robert Beecherell. $250, Debbie and Gary Vandergriff. $250, Doug Christensen. $250, Guy and Lisa Fielder. $1,000, Clayton Black. $250, Mark Hardwick. $250, Jean Burkholder. $250, Sandra Staley. $250, Tracy Elms. $500, Miles Baldrick. $500, Jack and Melissa Valley. $500, Paul Davis. $500, Robert and Deanne McNaughton. $250, John Norwood. $250, Randy and Julie Stevens. $1,500, Duke Edwards. $500, Kevin and Salem Leary. $250, Glenn Ellis. $250, Will Christensen. $250, Brian McLaughlin. $1,000, Jake and Mary Blake. $250, Eddie Ullenberg. $250, Suzanne Smith. $500, Stephen and Lee Robertson. $250, Jeff and Mary Beth Hewitt. $500, Catherine Chalfant. $500, Tony and Janet Sam. $250, Glenn Ellis. Expenditures, $1,575, Campaign Engineering Strategies. $750, Midland County Republican Party. $1,149, Permian Basin Office Products. $2,000, Norfleet Strategies. $783, The Oilfield Photographer. $1,577, Visa. $1,275, No Box Creative, LLC. $916, Debbie Bergen Promotional Products. $661, United States Postal Service. Campaign Finance. Kreiner Leads in Campaign Contributions Among Sheriff's Candidates by Caitlin Randall. David Kreiner has raised more than $40,000 in campaign contributions, nearly double that of his closest competition in the Midland County Sheriff's race. A campaign finance report filed with Midland County Elections Office earlier this month shows Kreiner has raised $40,849 and spent $1,263 on advertising and filing fees. Rory McKinney has raised $23,987 and spent $5,811, according to his report. Tom Hain has raised $7,150 and spent $1,345. The fourth candidate in the running for sheriff, Joe Lozano, has not filed a campaign finance report with the elections office. Elections Administrator Deborah Land said the deadline to file for the latest period was January 15th. Below is campaign finance report information for Midland County Sheriff's candidates. Contributions and expenditures of $250 or more are listed. David Kreiner, total political contributions, $40,849. Total political expenditures, $1,263. Contributions, $1,000 Don Carruth, $7,500 Herman Walker, $5,000 Thomas Carney, $3,000 Jackie Swanson, $1,500 John McDaniel, $2,000 Ann Mitchell, $500 Charlie Harris, $5,000 Delyn Ketterman, $2,500 David Gross, $500 Jose Cuevas, $2,500 Candace Matlock, $2,000 Darren Clemens, $2,500 John Norwood, $2,500 Kimberly Morges, $1,000 Jimmy Smith, $750 Christopher Lillis. Expenditures, $750 to the Midland County Republican Party, $573 to Hendershot Photography. Rory McKinney, total political contributions, $23,987. total political expenditures, $5,811. Contributions, $500 Hugh Box, $250 D. Carter, $500 D. Carter, $500 Michael Harrison, $500 Paula Johnson, $1,000 Mary Lou Midkiff, $2,500 Brian Scarborough, $10,000 Douglas Scarber, $300 Larry and Lillian Smith, $500 Al Walford, $500 Jeff Webb, $500 Scott Welch, $1,782 Walter Tomlin. Expenditures, $2,484 with A1 sign engravers, $851 cutting edge advertising, $273 Lowe's Home Improvement, $500 Rory McKinney, $750 Midland Republican Party. Tom Hayne. Total political contributions, $7,150. Total political expenditures, $1,045. Contributions, $1,000 Ronnie Aaron, $500 Reuben Richardson, $5,000 Integrity Services, $300 Robert Hammerman. Expenditures, $750 Midland Republican Party, $367 West Texas Business Services.
Hello, I'm Jesse. The intercom system at Midland High was not working in parts of the school Thursday during an hour-and-a-half-long lockdown that ended with no gun found at the scene and no charges filed against the student suspect. School administrators were tasked with going door-to-door to alert teachers of the lockdown as a result of the failing intercom, said Jeff Horner, Midland ISD's Executive Director of Secondary Schools, at a press conference Friday morning. He said he did not know which areas of the school were affected and how many students were in classrooms where the intercom wasn't working, but, quote, "It was enough that we went throughout the whole building with a team of administrators to make sure everybody knew we were in a lockdown," end quote. James Riggin, Chief Operations Officer at MISD, said the systems in all of MISD's secondary schools, including Midland High, are more than 20 years old and sometimes malfunction. Quote, "It's older technology. The system itself with that type of age of technology has issues from time to time," he said. Riggin estimated it would cost about $420,000 to replace the complete system. "The cost of the replacement parts would be far less," said Alana Ladd, MISD's chief communications officer. Quote, "We are still awaiting an invoice for the cost of the replacement park work, as the work has not been concluded," she said. The parts have been ordered to repair the system, and it will take approximately 2 to 4 weeks to do so, Riggin said. MISD communications specialist Trevor Hawes said the parts were ordered early last week. MISD Police Chief Arthur Barclay said the lockdown began after they received a Crime Stoppers tip that a student had pointed a gun at another student. He said they found it to be a credible tip at the time and felt there was a gun involved. However, MISD police are now considering the possibility it was a false report, and there's a good chance charges could be brought against the tipster if it's determined they intentionally made a false report, Barclay said. He said the school, outside campus, and surrounding perimeter were searched and no weapon was recovered. Horner said the suspected student was not allowed on campus today as the investigation continues, but that, quote, "right now what we know about that student is he was just in the wrong place," end quote. He said that while law enforcement officers attempted to locate the suspect, the teenager was participating in the lockdown along with the rest of the student body. "The student was not aware anyone was looking for him or trying to hide," Horner said. The student was tardy to class and missed the beginning of the lockdown and was then swept into a classroom and it took longer than we would have liked to find him, Horner said. He said that student may face disciplinary action for being tardy, but will not face additional repercussions unless the investigation reveals new information. Barclay declined to say if the person who made the Crime Stoppers tip was on campus Friday, or if that person was a student or administrator. He said administrators will debrief after Thursday's events and consider areas of improvement, but so far have not considered placing metal detectors at Midland High's entrances. Quote, "Whenever you put in metal detectors for any purpose, you have to consider the time factor involved in processing students through a metal detector," he said. Despite an increase in the number of media reports about students charged with either bringing a weapon to school or making threats against other students, both at MISD schools and Ector County ISD schools, Barclay said they have not received more reports of threats than last year. Analyst says geopolitical risks, higher demand, will boost crude. The story was written by Mella McEwen. As 2020 gets underway, at least one analyst is forecasting a bearish outlook for energy. But that outlook includes crude oil as a bright spot in energy. Quote, "Relative to gas, liquefied natural gas, coal, and most agricultural products other than sugar, oil will perform relatively well," Chris Midgley, global head of analytics at S&P Global Platts, said in an email. Offering a boost to the crude oil outlook are geopolitical risks that are expected to remain high, especially tensions between the U.S. and Iran, and possible supply declines from Iraq, Libya, and Nigeria. Global oil demand growth is expected to accelerate to 1.26 million barrels per day from 950,000 barrels a day in 2019, led by the International Maritime Organization's 2020 standards requiring shippers to use low-sulfur fuel oils. These new standards will favor sweet crudes, such as West Texas Intermediate, Midgley said. Quote, "The demand boost will last for a while, but as the industry learns to make more low-sulfur fuel and use less gas oil, the impact will weaken and other impacts, such as the growth of LNG and increased biofuels displacing gas oil in sectors other than shipping, result in the demand boost quickly getting eroded," he wrote. IMO 2020, coupled with lower oil inventories and deeper output cuts from members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and allied nations, will lift WTI above $60 a barrel early in the year before prices retreat somewhat to the high $50 per barrel, Midgley said. He said U.S. shale activity will slow as drillers focus on capital discipline, and full-cycle break-even prices will remain around $60 a barrel. Still, Midgley expects U.S. will grow productions by 1.3 million barrels a day, rising to 20.9 million barrels per day, again the highest production growth globally. This increase, he said, will put domestic production above domestic consumption for the first time in decades, though the U.S. will still import crude in 2020. Exports of U.S. shale oil will jump 1.5 million barrels per day. Quote, "Climate change and eliminating fossil fuels will have negligible impact on demand in 2020, but is a more medium-term threat," he wrote. Continuing the quote, "People will not get rid of their existing cars, and planes will not change fuels in 2020, so we have to keep perspective here. However, people may, but will unlikely, turn down their heating a degree or two or reduce cooling in the summer, which will mainly impact natural gas and power consumption," end quote. In his 2020 outlook, Midgley wrote, quote, "With the spotlight being increasingly put on the impacts of climate change, as highlighted by Greta Thunberg and the Climate Extinction Rebellion, lower energy prices threaten to continue to drive increased demand for energy and challenge the economics for alternative energies and transportation. Efforts by governments to increase energy prices to support the climate agenda will continue to be met by equal opposition, as seen by the protests in Chile, Ecuador, and Iran. As we step into the next decade, we arrive at an intriguing crossroad for the energy transition, which will be shaped by regulation, technology, and consumer sentiment. The paths we choose will shape the future for generations to come." End quote. Asked whether he was hopeful, pessimistic, or uncertain about which paths will be chosen, Midgley wrote, quote, "We at S&P Global Platts are hopeful that we can play a positive role in influencing the direction taken as seen recently with the launch of renewable energy and hydrogen benchmarks. However, governments struggle with long-term policies which often cost the electorate in the short term, resulting in opposition and protests. Given a lack of real concrete progress from the United Nations Conference of Parties on Climate Change, we remain concerned about the true will to make progress. That being said, environment, social, and government, ESG, will play an important role in influencing industry and investors, and as such, there are signs of momentum in the right direction." End quote. This is the medical advice column, To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. Tests for COPD. Dear Dr. Roach, what tests check for emphysema? Are they the same tests for COPD? My age is 80. Answer. There are two main forms of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, chronic bronchitis and emphysema. The main risk factor is cigarette smoking, but there are other risk factors including a genetic condition, alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S., and it gets a shockingly low amount of research money for such an important condition. Diagnosing COPD early is important in order to relieve symptoms, prevent hospitalizations, and improve the quality of life and survival rates. The diagnosis of COPD should be suspected when there are classic symptoms, shortness of breath, chronic cough, sometimes productive, wheezing, and fatigue all may be present. The diagnosis of COPD is usually confirmed by tests of lung function. Spirometry may be done at the physician's office, but formal pulmonary function testing in the lab gives a definitive answer. Testing is done only to confirm a clinical diagnosis. Pulmonary function testing is expensive and time-consuming, and can lead to inappropriate diagnoses if done indiscriminately. Midland Festival Ballet takes the stage. Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will accompany ballet. Tchaikovsky and Johnny Cash? Sounds unlikely, but the Midland Festival Ballet has plans to present an exciting night of favorites, tributes, and collaborations including music from Tchaikovsky to the Man in Black. The production is scheduled at 7:30 p.m. February 8th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The Midland Festival Ballet website, midlandfestivalballet.org, details that the show features world-renowned favorite Swan Lake Act 2, Arensky Dances, and brand-new works Danzon, and You Say the Party Never Ends, spanning the genre of ballet from classical to contemporary. Midland Festival Ballet, founded in 1993, is a nonprofit organization committed to bringing the beauty of ballet to the basin. The performance includes Arensky Dances, a neoclassical work by dance icon, former Atlanta Ballet director Robert Barnett. This ballet features a series of classical duets and a piano score by Anton Arensky. The work was originally choreographed for the Atlanta Ballet and will feature a trio of musicians on stage with the dancers. Swan Lake Act 2. One of the most famous ballets, Swan Lake, is a favorite around the world. Act 2 features the story of Odette, a princess doomed to live as a swan, and the well-known melodies of Tchaikovsky. Special guest artists will perform the featured roles of Odette and Prince Siegfried. Danzon, a premiere work choreographed specifically for Midland Festival Ballet, Katia Garza's Danzon bridges the gap between neoclassical and contemporary ballet with Latin flair. The syncopated rhythms and sultry tones of composer Arturo Marquez sets the stage for this exciting new ballet. You say, the party never ends. Set to the iconic music of Johnny Cash, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Laurie McKenna, and Robert Earl Keane, performed by local band Angel and the Badmen, this contemporary work is choreographed by award-winning local choreographer Pearl Wamsley. This performance is sponsored by the FMH Foundation, with additional support from the Arts Council of Midland, Odessa Arts, Permian Basin Area Foundation, Rhea Charitable Trust, and Texas Commission on the Arts. Additionally, this project is sponsored in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts. If you go, Midland Festival Ballet's Iconic, 7:30 p.m. February 8th, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. For tickets, go online at wagnernoel.com.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram. This is Section A. The headline reads, Midland Development Corporation Close to Second Spaceport Occupant, by Stuart Doreen. Endeavor Energy CEO Autry Stevens is among officials at Florida-based satellite company looking to come to Midland's spaceport. The Midland Development Corporation is on the verge of filling the second empty building at the Spaceport Business Park. The MDC board will vote Monday to allow its executive director to negotiate and execute an economic development agreement with Kepler Aerospace Limited, which, according to its website, quote, is developing both highly efficient and economically viable satellite delivery systems, unquote. MDC Chief Operating Officer Sarah Harris told the Reporter Telegram that the sublease agreement is in final review with Kepler Aerospace's legal team. The agreement calls for Kepler to occupy the empty 17,000-square-foot building, once occupied by Orbital Outfitters, at the business park. Harris said the deal does not include a cash incentive, but that if Kepler meets contractually obligated milestones, it will receive lease abatements for 3 years. The deal is almost identical to the MDC's deal with Avalon Space Technology and Science, made late in 2018, she said. AST, which designs and manufactures miniature satellites, took over the hangar once occupied by X-Corps Aerospace. The company has received rent abatements for reaching its negotiated goals. Harris said the agreement with Kepler calls for the company to create at least 20 new jobs, $2 million in annual payroll, and have $80 million in personal property investment by its third year. Those are conservative estimates, Harris said. That means Midland Spaceport, which has been a hot-button issue politically after failed deals with X-Corps and Orbital, could be home to two satellite companies that between them promise at least 190 full-time jobs, $15 million in payroll, and $94.25 million in capital improvements, personal property, and inventory investment at the property. While AST has moved its corporate headquarters to Midland, Kepler Aerospace will continue to have its headquarters at Cape Canaveral, Florida, Harris said. Harris said Midland Spaceport and its location at a commercial airport are factors in Kepler's interest in Midland. Kepler's website states that it has several technologies in the fields of microwave, propulsion, and energy, and has recently filed for 8 trademarks in both the flight and defense use categories. The company is currently developing and commercializing many of these technologies, such as its proprietary plasma or high-energy electrical power, technology to generate propulsion, thrust, lift, and flight, Kepler's website states. The company has also developed several other proprietary propulsion, energy, and microwave burst technologies, can be used in several configurations, and are currently being developed by the company as technologies to be marketed to the military and defense industries. Kepler officials include Buzz Aldrin, a spokesman, government liaison, and advisor, and Midlander Autry C. Stevens, chief executive officer at Endeavor Energy Resources. Stevens is listed as an advisory board member and local government liaison. The Midland Development Corporation board will vote on the agreement at its meeting set for 10 a.m. Monday at the basement conference room at City Hall. This column is entitled January Can Be Alcohol Free. This is a guest column by Carol Cates. Carol Cates is the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. You can reach her via email at carol.cates@steward.org. One of the newest health trends is dry January. Dry January is when a person makes the decision to make the entire month of January alcohol-free. Dry January started as a public awareness campaign in the United Kingdom 4 years ago by a charity called Alcohol Change. The idea is a month of being alcohol-free is a good way to reset a person's relationship with alcohol. Over 2 million people now participate in Dry January in the UK, and it is a quickly growing trend here in the US. An estimated 1 in 5 Americans participate in Dry January as well. If you have heard about Dry January and are already taking the month off, or you are considering taking the next month as your dry January, here are some things to consider. One of the downsides of trying a dry January is that for some people, cutting alcohol cold turkey can be dangerous. The risk is related to how much people drink prior to their dry January. Heavy and even moderate drinkers can experience alcohol withdrawal. Alcohol withdrawal can cause severe health issues, even death, if it is not treated appropriately under the supervision of healthcare professionals. People who are considering or participating in Dry January need to remember that Dry January isn't treatment for an alcohol use disorder. A self-assessment tool that experts ask you to consider to determine if Dry January is right for you is the CAGE self-assessment tool. C equals unsuccessful cut-down attempts in the past. A. Annoyed. Do you feel annoyed by others commenting about your drinking? G. Guilt after drinking. And E. Eye-opener. Do you need a drink in the morning or notice other physical dependence? If you answer yes to any of these questions, speak to a healthcare provider before participating in Dry January. For those without an alcohol use disorder, Dry January has been shown to provide several benefits. The first benefit people see is better sleep. The National Sleep Foundation states that alcohol affects how quickly adenosine rises and then leaves your blood system, making rise quickly so you nod off, but then dissipate quickly so people tend to wake up in the middle of the night and wake up groggy. Alcohol also decreases the amount of REM sleep, so sleep is less restorative. Alcohol Change states that 70% of participants cite better sleep and 66% cite more energy. The next benefit is a drop on the scale. alcohol-laden drinks tend to be heavy in calories, and those calories are liquid calories, so they are not as filling as food calories. In addition, alcohol affects willpower, so people tend to eat more and make less healthy choices when they are drinking. Benefit number 3 is financial. Alcohol Change states that 86% of Dry January participants saw a financial benefit with eliminating alcohol. Your skin may improve. Alcohol is a diuretic. That means it makes your kidneys take more water out of your system in the form of urine. That can result in dry, lusterless skin. In addition, alcohol can increase hormones like estrogen and cortisol, and it can spike blood sugar, especially when it is a part of a sugary drink. That combination can lead to increased breakouts. Alcohol can suppress the body's immune system. Studies have shown that 2 to 5 hours after drinking, levels of disease-fighting cells decrease. During cold and flu outbreak, like we are seeing now, a depressed immune system is not a good thing. Alcohol Change states 65% of their participants cite general improved health with Dry January. Lastly, a month without alcohol tends to decrease consumption year-round. 72% of Dry January participants are less likely to drink to intoxication or binge drink 6 months after participating in Dry January. If you are not sure Dry January is right for you, but you do want to reduce your alcohol intake, a mindful drinking compromise is Dryish January. Drink cocktails that contain less alcohol than your usual cocktail, or drinking smaller, a single versus a double, fewer cocktails, or adding in mocktails on some outings. As with most things, small changes in habits can over time make big impacts on your overall health. Have a safe, happy, and healthy New Year. This article reads, OCA Teacher Wins Teaching Excellence Award by Ruth Campbell. An Odessa Collegiate Academy AVID coordinator and teacher recently won a National Society for Leadership and Success Award for Excellence in Teaching. Elizabeth Gray was honored along with Chet Cooper, OC Anatomy and Physiology Associate Professor 2. Honorary membership are Mikkel Lemons, Odessa Professor of Agriculture, Mauro Blessed Matai, Odessa College Law Enforcement Training Academy Coordinator, and Eric Baker, Odessa College Department Chair of Visual and Performing Arts, and Debbie Lieb, Ector County ISD Community Engagement Specialist. Winning for excellence in service to students were Katie Nisbet, Odessa College Interim Dean of the School of Liberal Arts and Education, and Celine Watts, OC Mobile Fab Lab Coordinator. Gray said it was exciting to win the award, and she had to be nominated. Ms. Gray is well deserving of this award, Principal James Ramage said. He added that she is a fantastic teacher, devoted to the students, who looks out for their best interests all the time. It couldn't happen to a better person, Ramage said. This is Gray's 7th year with ECISD. Her first 3 years were at Hayes STEAM Academy, and the last 4 have been with OCA, which was formerly known as Falcon Early College High School. The school moved from the campus at University of Texas Permian Basin to Odessa College in 2018. Everything's great, Gray said. We feel more established this year for sure than we did last year. The kids are getting more involved with Odessa College societies, student groups, and all that. One of the things she enjoys about being at the early college high school is its small student body. We can be more of a family, and I thoroughly enjoy, now that we're at Odessa College, watching the kids be able to graduate with their associates before their high school degree. It's pretty exciting, Gray said. Recently, she had 31 of 66 seniors already accepted to college. I even had kids messaging me over Thanksgiving telling me they got accepted, Gray said. A Permian High School graduate, Gray graduated from Texas Women's University in Denton with a bachelor's degree in history. She earned a master's in professional education from UTPB. She is starting a second bachelor's in mechanical engineering. Currently at OC, Gray plans to transfer back to UTPB in the fall of next year. Eventually, she would like to switch careers. The second bachelor's is taking a while because I'm only doing one class at a time. I have to pay cash for it, so it will be like 4 or 5 years from now. I want to work on planes or rocket ships or something, Gray said. Maybe NASA one day. I don't know. Winning the National Society for Leadership and Success Award makes Gray want to work harder. I want to prove that I've earned that recognition and that honor, Gray said. She said being an excellent teacher boils down to the relationships you have with the students, making them feel welcomed in your class, and they know that they can come to you for help, and just always being there to advocate for them. Gray said she was inspired to become a teacher by Martha Overby. She's still a teacher here in ECISD. I had her in 3rd and 5th grade, and that's how she made me feel, like she was an excellent teacher, and I wanted to be that somebody for students, Gray said. This column is entitled The One Thing, a guest column by Dr. Jimmy Braswell, chaplain, home hospice. Most of us remember the movie City Slickers, the story of some city boys going on a cattle drive and discovering from an old cowboy that rediscovering the one thing in their lives most important was what they were really looking for. Seeking the one thing is why we take risks, try to find ourselves on trips, work, and things. It's what we are looking for at Christmas. Like those city slickers, you and I must rediscover the most important things or thing in our lives. We have to be brought to the place where we really don't know anything for sure, to call out with our hearts, and God reminds us of what 1 Corinthians 13 teaches us, that there are three things that remain. 1. Faith, that we must trust God to humbly face whatever comes our way and be willing to face it with Him. 2. To hope that what our journey and experience in this life is what we were meant to experience, and have stewardship over that what we are doing, facing, and seeking is really of value. And last, 3. To love, to completely devote ourselves to serving and helping others, to seek the peace and comfort for others. Jesus summed them up in the Great Commission. All the law and the prophets are summed up in to love God with all that we are, and to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. As we begin a new year, rediscover the one thing. This is the section on religion. This article is entitled, Pornography Addiction Can Be Defeated. God's Forgiveness Obtainable Through Faith, Minister Says, by Bob Campbell. Andrews. It took Leslie Lynn Boone a while to decide what he wanted to do in life, but since 1986, when he enrolled at Sunset International Bible Institute in Lubbock, he has served as a minister in Big Spring, Bryan, Hempstead, near Houston, and since 2011 at the Andrews Church of Christ, where in late November he had been preaching on forgiveness, particularly as it related to the addiction to pornography. More and more secular studies show that pornography is not a natural thing, Boone said. It impacts how we look at ourselves and how we look at other people. So it's not something that's okay. It has a negative impact on us and our relationships. But that doesn't mean we have to be stuck there when we get caught up in it. We can get back to where God wants us to be in our relationships and lives. The minister had been teaching from the 1st and 5th chapters of 1 John, which he said, quote, is a nice book reminding us that God forgives. People sometimes wrestle with doubts about forgiveness, but 1 John tells us that God is faithful and forgives, he said. If we're faithful, we have eternal life. He keeps his promises in Christ. Boone is a 57-year-old California native whose dad was an aircraft mechanic who took the family to Illinois, Texas, Oklahoma, Iowa, Louisiana, and back to Texas where Boone graduated from high school in Vidor on the Gulf Coast. Boone won an appointment to the Air Force Academy, but quickly realized it was wrong for him, then worked as a cable TV technician in Beaumont until going to the SIBI in 1986. He and his wife Beth have 3 children and 2 grandchildren. A lot of times, the addiction to pornography starts with curiosity, he said. The average kid nowadays is exposed to it by age 8. It's a perfect picture of how humanity can take something good and really mess it up, turning sex into something that is not healthy and is actually harmful. Meeting at 201 Northwest 2nd Street at 10:30 a.m. Sundays, Andrew's Church of Christ is attended by an average of 200 people. Cavett Church of Christ Secretary Jennifer Cox of Bryan said Boone is one of those people you can't say no to. Leslie is always in a good mood, Cox said. I never heard him say a negative thing about anybody and never saw him lose his temper in all those 10 years at Cavett. He sees the good in people. He is not a suit and tie person like most ministers. He wears shorts with no shoes. He loves music and has a beautiful voice. When he was studying, he put bagpipe music on. He has a heart for people. He and his wife adopted 2 children. He is one of a kind. Former Andrews Church of Christ youth minister Mark Brewer, now an Andrews Middle School shop teacher, said Boone is easy to talk to and fun to be around. It doesn't matter what's going on with Leslie, Brewer said. He always has time to stop and talk and make you feel like you are the most important person in the room. He is very book smart, but doesn't come across that way. He focuses more on relationships than anything. Everything else just comes along with that. This article is entitled ECISD Eyes Neuroscience Cross-Curricular by Ruth Campbell. With training from Backyard Brains Do-It-Yourself Neuroscience under their belts, educators from Ector County ISD are preparing to roll out the course in the 2020-2021 school year. Chief Innovation Officer Jason Osborne said a total of 9 people attended training in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with Backyard Brains, including an English Language Arts Coordinator, Instruction Specialist, an elementary school and middle school teacher. Osborne said that having the secondary ELAR coordinator, Elisha Vega, along proved to be super beneficial because we're very interested in cross-curricular alignment. The English language arts piece, he said, will help students with descriptive writing and any research project they might do so they can share it with others. That's a huge component. Everything you do in science and technology has to be written. It has to be shared. So how do you share your results? And it was beneficial to have this person along. She saw great value in this and is super excited to start incorporating into lessons and then tying into our Texas standards, Osborne said. Instructional specialist Ashley Thomas at Hayes STEAM Academy also will train other instructional specialists, he said. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa will be rolling out neuroscience in 3 sections next school year. Osborne said neuroscience research and design will be the course description, and it will include a lot of hands-on and Backyard Brains materials, as well as a university partnership where students will work with real data and do real analysis. Teachers will be able to tie this into the standards that students need to learn, and students can create their own research projects. We plan to create a journal club in this course where kids look at scientific text and try to direct that text and then have debates in the classroom around the text that they are presenting, with the anticipation of them eventually writing their own descriptive texts, whether in a journal format or scientific poster, Osborne said. He added that bioengineering is offered in the Career and Technology Education Health Sciences Practicum. NTO Principal Gerardo Ramirez said in January and February the high school counselor, Clelia Carrillo, will talk to sophomores and juniors on education. We are ecstatic to offer neuroscience as a science and elective course to our learners, Ramirez said in a text message. we felt it was an innovative course that aligned with our project-based learning design on teaching and learning. It would also assist in preparing learners for college and career fields in medicine and STEM, Ramirez said. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. Bernadette Barragan, an anatomy and physiology teacher at NTO, was one of the teachers that went to Ann Arbor. This past fall semester, we surveyed learners on offering the course and received positive responses and high interest. The collaboration and support with ECISD's PIC Education was essential. It will assist Mrs. Barragan in professional learning and also linking her to collaborative groups at the higher education and medical field levels, he added. Osborne said he hopes other campuses will offer neuroscience too. Through Backyard Brains, we will have ties with the University of Michigan and their partnerships. Also, the University of Minnesota. As a district, we'll have the opportunity to do behavioral neuroscience working with organisms such as cuttlefish. This is super exciting because the students and teachers learn cuttlefish behavior. They will also learn the applications of machine learning, machine vision, and ultimately artificial intelligence while doing neuroscience, Osborne said. Other programs are in the works as well. Osborne said his department is in the process of getting Manu Prakash, a Stanford University researcher who was part of the team that developed the Foldscope, an inexpensive microscope, to present to students. What we would like to do with Foldscope is tie it in with all our current PIC education initiatives, so if you want to look at microsamples and paleontological studies or geological studies, you can. If we're going to look at brain tissue, we can get some of that from Backyard Brains and other partners so kids can set up their own microscope, their own slides, so they do their own sampling. They can look at the images, then they can share those images through a global blog program, which is really fascinating. Here's the ELAR piece coming back in, Osborne said. This is a way to really get kids curious. It sparks that discovery piece that's in all of our brains as humans that we love to do. We like to see, feel, and touch things, and analyze things, and discover things. So this gives them the hands-on piece and that ownership piece so that they have something of their own. Then their own data, their own processing of data. So we're super excited about that. So that one's coming up, he added. This article is entitled Education Partnership Launches Power Bag by J.C. Lewis. Odessa. Parents who have children at Odessa Regional Medical Center and Medical Center Hospital will be provided with information and resources through POWER, Power of Words and Early Reading. The initiative was announced December 11th at the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa. From the moment of their birth, their family will be made aware of the research and will be given tools on how they can begin to interact effectively with their children to build brain power, language skills, and to make them kindergarten ready, said Lorraine Perryman, chair of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin. She said the Education Partnership is a collaboration to bring the entire community together to focus on educating children from cradle to career. Perryman got the idea while attending a conference at which she learned about brain bags in Pensacola, Florida. All of the information in the power bag is based on solid research, Perryman said. There was a huge study that was done that identified a 30 million word gap of children in low-income families versus children in high-income families. About 5,000 children are born in Ector County every year, Perryman said. Families will receive a book bag with a power bib, information about the initiative, a Milestone Moments book created by the CDC, a Baby's Busy Day book from the CDC, a bilingual Maria Had a Little Llama book, articles about infant development, a magnet with the link to the foundation and research, and a key toy. Without ORMC or MCH, we would not be here today, Perryman said. They are the major funders of this initiative and the ones to make the program go forward from here on out. Dr. Sarah Amiri, a pediatrician at ORMC, said it is noticeable in development when children are engaged in their home life. As a pediatrician, time and time again, I have noticed that kids who have been intentionally read to since birth have a broader vocabulary and they achieve developmental milestones earlier, Amiri said. These children are more likely to be school-ready when they start kindergarten and are more successful in their academic career. Through the Power Bag Initiative, we are providing parents with the knowledge and resources on the importance of daily reading, singing, talking, and playing with their babies, Amiri said. Kristen Abbott-Timmons, Divisional Director of Women and Children for Medical Center Health System, said this is an impactful gift to send home with newborns' families. It is very important for us to instill things into our moms so they know how to care for their infants, Abbott-Timmons said. This is another level of caring for them to be able to put something so important into their hands. It's developing that eye contact and voice recognition, she said. They watch you and they see things, so all of that is being instilled in them, making it so important to establish that from the beginning. ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said children need help before reaching the school system to arrive ready to start learning. On the first day of kindergarten, 65% of our kids aren't kindergarten ready, Murray said. So 65% of our kids begin their first day of school not even at the starting line. We have an opportunity as a community to make sure that on the first day of school that every child in ECISD is ready for their first day of school. Murray said ECISD will be looking to expand these programs. Our contribution to this is to volunteer and to make sure we are part of the stuffing and delivery, Murray said. We also recently announced that we will be starting a full-day pre-K. Starting in August of 2020, we will be having a full-day pre-K program for all four-year-olds. We have to do something from birth to the age of five. Adrian Vega, Executive Director of Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, said that the blame for not preparing children usually gets passed down from high school to elementary school, but power bags will be helping all kids in the community. As a community, we are starting at birth, Vega said. This is phase one. When we get back together in January, the focus of that meeting is to begin to craft and lay out a community-wide strategy and plan to ensure that when children leave the hospital, that every single touch point and through line between leaving the hospital and starting pre-K, we have a network. This includes bringing together pediatricians, clinics, child care centers, daycare centers, so a network can be built for kids in Ector County, Vega said. The first power bags were distributed on January 1st.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.